Okay, we're back. WATD 95.9 FM. Friends with Benefits. Here to talk with us tonight is guest Dr. Tina Gussin, who has over 35 years of advanced practice nursing experience. She received her undergraduate degree from the Medical College of Virginia. She received her master's degree as a pediatric clinical nurse specialist from the University of Virginia, and her Doctor of Nursing Practice degree from Old Dominion University. She is currently an assistant professor at Old Dominion University School of Nursing, where she teaches in the Doctor of Nursing Practice program. Dr. Gussin was most recently appointed as the director of the school's Center for Telehealth Innovation, Education and Research, CTIER. The center will serve as a telehealth learning hub and research center, not only for the state, but also the East Coast region of the U.S. She is the clinical manager for the pediatric telehealth program at Children's Hospital of the King's Daughters in Norfolk, Virginia. Hi, Dr. Gussin.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for the great intro. It's a pleasure to join you tonight and talk about a subject that I am very passionate about.
Yes, thank you. Telehealth is an exciting topic in healthcare today. Also on the show with us tonight is our show's sponsor and managing partner of Blue Cirrus Consulting, Michelle Hager.
Hi. Hi, Joe. Hi, Dr. Gussin. Great to have you on the show tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be a great show. So let's get started. So, Dr. Gussin, it was nice seeing you again when we attended your telehealth presentations at the Virginia Telehealth Network Summit in Virginia, and also at the South Central Telehealth Resource Conference in South Bend, Indiana.
Thanks for inviting me to join you today.
Yeah, I listened to your presentation on telehealth etiquette training, preparing interprofessional teams for successful encounters. I thought this presentation was very timely for telehealth as we start hearing healthcare organizations and hospitals providing care remotely. I'm sure people, and more so people my parents' age, the baby boomers, are curious on what to expect from a virtual visit. So I have a question for you. What are some of the unique etiquette skills necessary for a successful telehealth encounter?
Joe, thanks for asking. Interestingly, the skills are quite easy, but they're not intuitive. Interesting, the habits that most of our providers have developed can be overlooked when they are taking care of a patient via telehealth. It's quite different from an in-person visit. These habits, when they're not addressed, can really derail a telehealth encounter, and then what happens is the visit is failed and the patient is really not happy with the telehealth encounter at all.
Yeah, I bet. So,
really affect adoption for sure if you have a bad encounter because, you know, the physician or the clinician's not trained in how to do telehealth. So this is an interesting topic for our listeners.
Yeah. So, Dr. Gussin,
you're absolutely right. The equipment is quite high end. It's the soft skills that are so important.
Oh, that's great. So technology plays a key role. What are the most important elements of delivering a telehealth visit?
Well, when we think about telehealth, most companies train providers on the use of the equipment that we just spoke about, and not these soft skills or the telehealth etiquette that's necessary for the telehealth encounter. First, telehealth really brings a unique HIPAA challenge or consideration. And for those that don't know what HIPAA is, that's really just the security. Providers also need to be mindful of their movements, their gestures, facial expressions, as they can often be misinterpreted in a telehealth visit. Good communication is also key to a successful encounter. Something as simple as what you're wearing for a visit and where your badge is placed is critical. The patient on the other side of the screen needs to see your badge up near your shoulder, where oftentimes providers wear them kind of at waist level. Eye gaze and body placement within the computer screen can really make or break a visit.
Oh, that's good to know. So what are the common mistakes that you have seen with students and providers?
Well, I found in my research that students and experienced providers really make the same mistake when they're beginning to use telehealth. And I'm going to list a few that we've seen in our research and actually have written on.
Okay.
Providers oftentimes will forget to check the equipment at the start of a visit. And what happens with this is a delayed start or frustration on either end between the provider or the patient. The HIPAA guidelines are breached. For example, people will do a visit in an open room. They won't close the door. They'll do things that they never would consider if the patient was sitting in front of them. The background or what's behind the provider during the telehealth visit needs to be checked before a visit. So they have pictures of their family members, for example, that they don't want their patients to see. Their desk should be clear. Providers will often forget their placement within the canvas or the computer screen. So what I mean by that, instead of being centered on the computer screen, the top of their head may be cut off or the side of their head may be cut off. They're not centered nicely in the screen. Providers also have a hard time with the encounter because they look at the patient in the computer screen rather than up at the camera. And what happens with that is the patient feels as though the provider's looking down rather or looking down rather than at them. Oftentimes, providers will document during a visit. And if you're in person, you're clearly aware of the documentation taking place. When it happens through a telehealth encounter, the provider looks like they're either looking down or off to the side, so they appear disinterested. Oftentimes, during a telehealth encounter, providers will also forget the small talk. The computer really kind of becomes the elephant in the room, and they go right to the visit, and they don't ask things like, so what's the weather like outside today? Is it cold where you are? This type of small talk is really necessary in building that patient-provider connection and relationship that's critical in healthcare. Another interesting finding is really the casual nature that the students and providers take on during a telehealth visit. What I mean by this is they may drink coffee or eat a snack during a telehealth encounter, and they would never think of doing that when they were in an in-person visit. Another common problem that we see is when you have multiple providers conducting a telehealth visit. So what happens here is there are several providers sitting at a table conducting a visit with a patient and perhaps a provider on the other end. And what happens in these situations is two providers will start having a conversation with one another, what I call a sidebar, talking about the patient and the care management of the patient. But to the person on the other end, it again appears as though they're disinterested. Providers and students, the last thing is that they really get fidgety when they're doing a telehealth encounter. You know, hand gestures or playing with your hair, which may not be distracting in person, are really exaggerated on a telehealth encounter and become very distracting to the patient.
That's very interesting. I know when I do Zoom meetings with our group and, you know, you're on screen and you're looking at yourself like, man, I look awkward or my head's cut off or your background's like this picture of, you know, your office and it's kind of cluttered. So, yeah, that's very interesting. I was always interested in how, you know, what the etiquettes were for telehealth. So what are your feelings, Michelle? How do you feel about some of these examples of etiquette?
You know, it's funny you should say some of those examples, Dr. Gustin, because how many times, you know, as you said, a physician or in a nurse or two nurses, maybe a specialist involved in that telehealth encounter, they would never think to sort of let me take a sip of my drink, you know, while they're in a visit with a patient face-to-face. But it does happen because of the casual nature of these types of, I'll call it, quote-unquote, FaceTime type of approaches where we're really doing a video visit. But the background is often something people don't pay attention to, so it's good you brought that up because people can make judgment calls based on what is behind you. So you don't think about the fact that you've got, you know, a political book or something like that that you have on your shelf because you happen to be reading that or some other type of, you know, document or picture. But then suddenly that becomes, you know, for the patient, a differentiator, and it starts to block the patient-provider interaction. So it's such an important element.
Yeah, those are good points.
Exactly.
Very good points. Can you imagine your doctor has like a Patriots poster up on the back, and you know you're into the NFL?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm never seeing this
doctor.
You're
a Giants fan.
Oh, all those little nuances that wouldn't come up in a personal visit. And that's my next question. What are some of the biggest differences between an in-person visit and a telehealth visit?
Well, really, I like to teach my students that they're quite similar. But, you know, what I found is with telehealth is that the provider must really remain much more mindful of their words, their facial expressions, and their actions far more with a telehealth encounter than they do in an in-person visit. The analogy I make is the difference between stage acting and TV. So everything on stage is big, and it needs to be big. But on TV, the actors are trained to have very subtle movements, purposeful movements, and to not speak loudly. So telehealth is really TV. You know, and some of the things that are different, for example, with an in-person visit, you can have a long, purposeful pause where you maybe put your hand on your patient's leg and you lean forward and you look at them and you have that purposeful, quiet moment. Those long pauses are really awkward in a telehealth visit. Mm. As mentioned earlier, looking down looks like you're disinterested. We all chart while we're, or most providers will chart during an encounter. So what I say is you have to use your words. You have to tell the patient, I may be looking down or appear to be looking down. What I'm doing is charting, or I'm charting now. Another thing which students and providers get a kick out of is when I say our resting face can look like something other than just listening. You know, we all have a certain resting face, and it doesn't always look like you're interested. So they need to, again, think constantly about what am I thinking about right now and how am I resting with my face as I'm waiting for my patient to respond back to me.
Yeah.
Think about the things you do that are distracting during a visit and just they're magnified. For example, I talk with my hands. So when I'm doing a telehealth encounter, I'll sit on my hands.
Okay.
Good point.
That is a good point. The resting face.
Yep.
I have a father-in-law who has a very conflicting resting face, and I'm like, what's the matter, Papalu? He's like, nothing. I'm like, well, you're looking at me like you're so disapprovingly, huh?
I know. I tell the students, just look in the mirror at your resting face, and you too will know what it is.
That's interesting.
That's a good tip.
Yeah. So what's the age group? Who's having the most difficulty using telehealth as their modality for receiving care?
Well, Joe, it's probably not who you think. Our research has shown that the age group that struggles the most with telehealth encounters are the younger providers.
Really?
Millennials have grown up with technology, and because of that, we find that they're sloppy users of telehealth. They have been communicating via text, hashtag, video chat, really their entire life.
Right.
So they're finding it more difficult to flip this casual way of communicating into a medium of one that's really more professional.
That is.
We're also finding that it takes some experience in one field before they can transition that physical assessment that they know how to do with hands-on into that of a telehealth encounter.
Huh, that is interesting because I would think like my parents would have a difficulty with the telehealth modality and that they would, you know, wouldn't know how to function the computer. But when you think about it, that stuff's sort of the easy part. It's actually, you know, expressing, you know, your concerns and talking with your doctor is the important stuff. So very interesting.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget, Joe, that most of those folks are grandparents who may not live in the same city as their grandchildren, and most of those folks at that age are used to doing something along the lines of FaceTime with grandchildren, used to doing some kind of video visit. That happens a lot now when folks aren't in the same, you know, cities.
So true, Michelle. That's a good point. So, Tina, that's very interesting, and I wouldn't never have thought that it was the millennials who have problems using telehealth, but interesting answer. So you must have a lot of funny stories that you can share. What are some of the funny stories that you've seen in the field of telehealth?
Oh, Joe, the stories from the field are really my favorite. So I am going to share a few with you, but realize as I share them that they are real, and I have removed the names to protect the innocent.
Okay.
So one of my, I know, in So let me tell you, the stories are critical in sharing this with students, because when you talk about telehealth etiquette, they generally look at me like, come on, Dr. Gustin, this is simple stuff, until you start sharing these real stories. So one of my favorite is a neurologist. So it's of a neurologist who took a call in the middle of the night for a stroke consult, which is one of the early uses of telehealth. So as he was examining the patient and asking for them to raise their arm and touch their nose, which is part of the assessment that you do for a stroke, he asked the provider and the patient, can you see me? The immediate response from the provider on the other end where the patient was, yes, doctor, we can see you, and also the person in bed behind you.
Oh, my goodness.
So you can only imagine. So the doctor obviously had gotten out of bed in the middle of the night to answer the call. He was sleepy. His computer was in the bedroom. He wasn't thinking about his background. And his partner was in bed behind him. And to top the whole story off, he didn't have a shirt on.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
So I've since heard the wraparound of that story, that it was late. It was a facility where the rural area knew the doctor well, and they just kind of let it roll on for a while because they wanted to rag on him. But it really did happen.
Yeah, and he answered the call, and I'm sure he...
And he answered the call. Right. There you go.
Oh, that is funny.
But at the end of the day, a person's life was saved in that situation.
Yes.
It was a stroke call. But
at the end of the day, he provided good care.
Oh, that is funny.
Another really interesting story for me is about an orthopedic surgeon that had been doing telehealth for years, and I had been seeing him in telehealth conferences probably for about 3 years. And I was doing an etiquette talk at a conference last year and wondered why he was sitting in my room, thinking the whole time, why are you here? You know how to do this. So anyway, at the end of the presentation, he came up to me privately and said, I'm so embarrassed. I have to tell you what I've been doing. I've really never thought about it before until your presentation, but I've taken calls in restaurants and bars.
Really?
And he said, yeah. And as he was telling me this, you could tell he was really very sheepishly kind of, you know, going. I almost felt like I was his priest. And he said, I went to the corner when I did it, but I was still in a bar. I'm not going to do that any longer.
Oh,
and really my takeaway was, here's a provider who's providing, again, an excellent service, real time, but not thinking about HIPAA because he's so comfortable with the technology.
Right.
And I think when folks are on call, this is also, I think it's something for our listeners to know, is there is such a shortage of physicians and these clinicians that we're asking them to work at all times of the day sometimes for call and all sorts. And they do get caught. Sometimes I know there's stories of folks doing visits in their cars. Now, they are doing them on the side of the road, stopping. But these are the realities of what, you know, happens with the clinicians now.
Wow. Yeah, that's true.
It is. I mean, one of the things that I'll teach is if you're on call, telehealth call, is take a lab coat with you, keep it in your car when you travel, and just even if you have to go to your car and park it and put the lab coat on, you look professional, and you're in a secure area and not around just bystanders.
Any psychiatrist stories? Any funny psychiatrist stories?
Huh?
Are there any funny psychiatrist stories? I know behavioral health is a big telehealth issue.
I do have a funny psychiatry story. I mean, it wasn't probably funny when it was happening, but it's a psychiatrist that was doing a telehealth visit with a child that was diagnosed with a paranoid personality disorder. And it was an established patient. So as the visit was progressing, the psychiatrist talks about how the child was becoming more and more agitated, and he couldn't figure out why the child was becoming more agitated. The kid finally jumped up. He slammed his chair down, stormed out of the room, and he said as he was kind of leaving, going out of the room, you have a tree growing out of your head and you're not paying attention to me, screaming it, slamming the door. And sure enough, the provider had a beautiful office plant sitting on the desk behind him, that looked like it was indeed growing out of his head.
Oh, wow.
And he was also charting during the visit.
Yep.
Looked like he wasn't paying any attention to the child during the encounter.
Wow.
So, needless to say, as I said, this was an established patient. After this, the family elected to not use telehealth again. And telehealth is really important for children in particular that are receiving behavioral health counseling via telehealth because they can stay in school and have this type of visit. They can go to a nurse's office, have their behavioral health visit, and go back to the classroom. Where if they had to be seen in person, they often miss a whole day or a half day,
mm-hmm.
you know, for
right.
their behavioral health visits in person.
Right. Those are the benefits of telehealth. And, you know, this is all sort of gearing towards, you know, it's people, doctors need to be trained. And I wanted to say, you know, congratulations on you're recently elected as the co-chair for CTEL, Interprofessional Telehealth Education Task Force, and that is developing competencies and standards for training multiple professionals for telehealth delivery. So what are some of your priorities in defining the standards for training?
Well, that's a great question. So interestingly, medicine and nursing, we're the largest users of telehealth or deliverers of telehealth, and yet our curriculums are not required to prepare these providers to deliver telehealth. And the reason for that is both nursing and medicine have jam-packed programs.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, CTEL, what we're doing is we're surveying schools, both nursing schools and medical schools, to determine kind of what's out there and what's being taught in various programs. And from that, we're compiling competencies that have been developed by different organizations. To date, there's not an overarching statement of competencies. Our hope in doing this is to develop what we're calling a toolbox that can be used by schools and organizations to prepare our future telehealth providers. So what we're hoping to put in this toolbox are case studies that schools have been using, case-based learning activities, learning modules, developed videos, and some training activities so that when programs want to implement this, they've got a place to go and kind of pull out best practices and best teaching methodologies. Because one of the biggest problems right now is the lack of experience that faculty have with regards to telehealth. If you think about it, this is a relatively new delivery model. And faculty have been teaching for 10, 20 years, and they haven't used telehealth themselves. So it's really hard to prepare a provider of tomorrow with a modality that you've never practiced yourself.
So true. And that's what that's why I enjoy you coming on the show tonight with us and kind of going through that, because people don't know. They don't know what to expect. It's new. And that leads me to my next question, Dr. Gustin. Please tell us about your research on interprofessional team-based care and how telehealth can be used as the instrument for connecting providers to providers and providers to patients.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a huge push in healthcare now for team-based interprofessional care. The research has shown that this type of delivery is really critical to the successful management of our complicated, chronically ill patients. Unfortunately, with the different providers, they're not all sitting at the same facility. They're not co-located. So telehealth, we're seeing as a vehicle that is really going to allow these professionals to come together to care for patients both synchronously, which is real time, or asynchronously, which is what we call store and forward. So some examples of types of delivery that we're doing through telehealth now for team-based care is Project Echo, e-consult, provider-to-provider consultation through video. I mean, can you imagine that? So you have a specialist that can have a video consult with a primary care doctor to really talk about the best care that can occur with that patient. And also telehealth visits that allow the rural facilities to meet with the tertiary providers at another facility hours away. So really what we're finding is that without early academic preparation for this type of innovative delivery of care, the future providers are going to enter the workforce not prepared to deliver this. they're not going to know what the really the opportunities are.
Right, right.
And that's a good point.
That is a good point. I know we're running short on time, but I wanted to skip ahead here and ask you one final question. I'm hearing questions from our listeners on the show. What is the future of healthcare? What are some of the biggest challenges for telehealth in the future? So what is the answer to providing quality care?
The answer to providing quality care. Telehealth is a tool that can really help leverage quality care. It's not a discipline. It's like a stethoscope.
Mm-hmm.
And our current providers really need to be made aware of this potential. Students need to be exposed. Patients are consumers now, and they want care on demand. They want best care, best practice, and telehealth is here. It's not the future any longer.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's interesting.
It's a good point, right? Because it's not just telehealth can be the difference between no care and care for some people, but for those, as we go into the future and it becomes just part of our health care that we provide, you still have to provide the same level of quality of care you would as a provider, and you expect to receive that same level of quality of care as a patient. So it's key at the work that you're doing, Dr. Gustin, and the Oregon and Old Dominion doing, just to try to level set. How are we really going to provide this care for the future? And what are those best practices that we can all sort of aspire to? So thank you for your work.
Yeah, thank
you. Thank you.
Yeah, this was a great, great interview. You really helped our listeners understand, you know what to expect from telehealth. And I wish you the best of luck with your training sessions with doctors and nurses. And I appreciate your time today. We always want to provide our listeners with helpful information on this show, and I appreciate your answers to explain how hospitals can start implementing telehealth strategies into their business plans. Many thanks to our show's sponsor, Michelle Hager and Blue Cirrus Consulting, for the opportunity to share information about telehealth and how we can help stakeholders throughout the country with planning their and implementing their telehealth programs. Have a great rest of the week, Dr. Gustin. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe and Michelle. It was a pleasure talking with both of you today. I look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you, Dr. Gustin. Take care.
All right. Okay, bye-bye.